Okay, so we have a primary pathogen that thrives in our water. In any other sector, the answer is vaccination. We have 33 authorized vaccines in Chile.
Inactivated, protein subunits, live vaccines, you name it.
So why are we still using hundreds of tons of antibiotics if we have 33 vaccines?
Because they aren't lasting the distance. The grow-out period is 12 to 18 months. Current vaccines might give some coverage early on, but that immunity just wanes.
And the core problem is where the microorganism lives.
It's intracellular. It has a bunker mentality. P. salmonis hides inside the cells, inside these membrane-bound vacuoles. It's not floating in the plasma where antibodies can tag it. It's hiding from the humoral immune response.
A whole new era of communication in the global aquaculture industry is coming. Now you have the brightest minds in aquaculture right in your pocket. And what's best? You can listen to all of them while driving to a farm, traveling, or running errands. It's never been this good, and it's never been this simple. Welcome to the Aquaculture Podcast Show, the first AI-based podcast in aquaculture, where you'll find cutting-edge insights in everything that's working in aquaculture, nutrition, health, and production. Inspired by the 2023 article titled, Use of Antimicrobials in Chilean Salmon Farming, Facts, Myths, and Perspectives, by Avendano Herrera, Ruben, Marcos Mancilla, and Claudio Di Miranda.
All right, let's look at the production map. You have Norway and Chile sitting right at the top of the global salmonid hierarchy.
Right.
In terms of harvested biomass, you know, the charts look very similar, but then you overlay the antimicrobial consumption metrics.
And that's where the graphs don't just diverge. I mean, they look like they're describing two completely different industries.
On two different planets.
It is a divergence that makes people in boardrooms and regulatory offices very uncomfortable. The immediate reflex is to talk about optics.
Or public perception.
Yeah.
But we're not doing that today. We're doing a hard technical audit. We're looking at the pathology, the pharmacology driving those numbers.
Exactly. We've got the 2023 review by Avendano Herrera, Mancilla, and Miranda. The title is Use of Antimicrobials in Chilean Salmon Farming, Facts, Myths, and Perspectives.
And this is the document you want on your desk if you're a veterinarian, a production manager, or, you know, a nutritionist dealing with Chilean biomass.
It absolutely cuts through the noise. It's not about apologizing or making excuses. It's about dissecting the specific biological trap that the Chilean sector is navigating.
So the mission for this deep dive is pretty clear. Why is the usage of 463 tons? Is it operational negligence?
Or is it a specific biological antagonist that dictates the whole sanitary landscape? Spoiler alert, it's the antagonist.
We are going to look at the ghost in the machine, Pisciracetia salmonis, and why it essentially holds the production parameters of Los Lagos and Aysén regions hostage.
Feed formulation software is stuck in the past. Most tools haven't evolved beyond basic least cost optimization. A diet forge changes that. It's an AI-powered platform with nonlinear ingredient modeling for enzymes and additives, cost per gain and maximum profit optimization, and real-time collaboration like Google Docs for nutrition. Every recommendation is grounded in world-class research, built for modern nutritionists who need more than legacy desktop software can deliver. Work seamlessly with your team and optimize the way modern operations demand. Try dietforge.ai free today. Feed formulation, finally modernized.
So let's start with the cold, hard numbers from the Avendano Herrera paper.
Okay. The 2021 figures show a total usage of 463.4 tons of antimicrobials.
Which gives you an annual consumption index of what? 0.47 kilograms per ton of harvested salmon.
Right. And if I'm sitting in Norway looking at the Norm VE data, I'm seeing near zero usage.
The comparison is inevitable, but it's often contextualized incorrectly. The assumption from the outside is, well, the Norwegians are just better farmers.
But that ignores the biological reality, doesn't it?
Completely. Norway's primary challenges, you know, viruses like PD or bacteria like Vibrio, are largely managed by vaccines that actually work. The Chilean toolset is different because the threat is just fundamentally different.
And the data shows this isn't a systemic bad farming issue. If you look at where that 463 tons goes, it's not spread evenly at all.
Not even close. You're looking at 98.74% of that administration happening in the marine stage.
Only 1.26% in freshwater.
So that effectively clears the hatchery and smolt phases. This isn't a case of poor smolt quality or bad hygiene in the tanks.
So the fish are hitting the salt clean, they're robust, they're healthy, and then they hit the cages.
They enter clean. But the pressure is marine endemic. And when that pressure hits, the industry reaches for one specific tool.
Chlorfenicol.
Chlorfenicol accounts for 97.1% of the usage in the marine stage. Oxytetracycline is a distant second.
It's worth pausing on that, on the molecule itself. There's this lingering myth, maybe a hangover from the 90s, that the industry is pumping critical human-class drugs into the water.
And that needs to be debunked immediately. The industry has not used second-generation fluoroquinolones like ciprofloxacin for over 15 years.
That door is closed.
It's shut. The regulatory framework under Cernapesca is incredibly tight. These are therapeutic applications, specifically metaphylaxis, never growth promoters.
But even with legal prescribed fluorphenicol, the volume is massive.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're not using it for growth, not using it in freshwater, what is eating up 463 tons?
It basically comes down to a single organism, Pichirikhetsia salmonis, SRS.
And in 2021, this one pathogen was responsible for 93.17% of all antimicrobial administration.
That's a staggering monopoly on pathology. If you solve for P. salmonis, you essentially solve the antimicrobial consumption issue in Chile.
So let's profile this antagonist. The Avendano Herrera paper spends a lot of time on this because there has been some debate.
Mm-hmm. You have authors suggesting it's just a pathobiont, right? An opportunist that attacks when we stress the fish out.
The stress theory. It's a convenient narrative because it puts the blame on bad practices.
The logic is, you know, if you just treated the fish better, the microorganisms wouldn't hurt them. But the analysis in this paper systematically dismantles that idea.
How so?
By proving it fulfills Koch's postulates as a primary pathogen. This is a member of the gamma proteobacteria that causes high mortality even in optimal welfare conditions. It doesn't need an open door.
It kicks the door down. The study also points out that if it were a commensal organism, we'd find it everywhere.
You would. You'd find it in the gut of healthy fish or abundantly in the water column. But the data shows the opposite. Absent an outbreak, P. salmonis is rare. It's an infectious agent that arrives, replicates, and destroys.
And it arrives specifically in those central Chilean regions. The geography is fascinating.
Las Lagas and Aysén are basically incubators. You have to look at the abiotic factors. Transmission peaks when seawater temps exceed 9 degrees Celsius.
And in the lab, it replicates best between 15 and 18 degrees Celsius.
And it loves high salinity over 26 PSU, so that perfectly describes the operational reality for most of the year.
But here's the kicker that really sinks the bad practice argument.
The Magallanes region, way down south.
That's much, much colder.
Water temps are between 4.7 and 9.9 degrees. The farming practices are identical. Same companies, same cages, same feed. But the incidence of SRS there is near null.
If it was about overcrowding, you'd have outbreaks in the south.
But you don't. It is a temperature-dependent primary pathogen. End of story.
Okay, so we have a primary pathogen that thrives in our water. In any other sector, the answer is vaccination. We have 33 authorized vaccines in Chile.
Inactivated, protein subunits, live vaccines, you name it.
So why are we still using hundreds of tons of antibiotics if we have 33 vaccines?
Because they aren't lasting the distance. The grow-out period is 12 to 18 months. Current vaccines might give some coverage early on, but that immunity just wanes.
And the core problem is where the microorganism lives.
It's intracellular. It has a bunker mentality. P. salmonis hides inside the cells, inside these membrane-bound vacuoles. It's not floating in the plasma where antibodies can tag it. It's hiding from the humoral immune response.
So until we crack the code on a vaccine that triggers a strong, lasting cellular response, we are stuck relying on therapy.
And that therapeutic reliance brings us to the elephant in the room, antimicrobial resistance, AMR.
If you read the headlines, you'd think Chilean salmon farming is breeding superbugs.
But the study makes a very sharp distinction here. It's crucial for anyone managing a site to understand the difference between clinical resistance, what you see on the walkway when fish keep dying,
and actual biological resistance. They looked at MIC studies on field isolates. What are the microorganisms actually showing in the Petri dish?
And they're showing that they are still susceptible. Despite decades of fluorphenicol use, the isolates remain largely wild type.
So we're not seeing the fluor gene or massive efflux pumps.
Not really.
Yeah.
Which seems counterintuitive, right? If the microorganism is susceptible in the lab, why is the vet seeing failure in the field?
Why do they have to retreat cages?
That is the multi-million dollar question. The study suggests it's multifactorial. a combination of that intracellular hideout, it's just physically hard to get the drug into the vacuole.
And maybe some dosing issues?
Potentially. So it's not that the bug is invincible, it's that the bullet isn't reaching the target.
And it sounds like there's a messiness in the data itself.
A huge standardization gap. We don't have a unified CLSI or UCAS protocol for P-Somonis testing. Every lab might be using a slightly different culture medium.
So lab A sensitive and lab B's resistant might just be because they're using different broths.
It creates noise. We need a unified medium to compare apples to apples.
Let's talk about the fallout, the environmental impact. The assumption is that dropping all this fluorphenicol creates a resistum in the sediment.
Again, the data forces us to nuance that. The study cites research showing that resistance in sediments under cages is often not significantly different from control sites far away.
Wait, so there's resistance in the middle of nowhere?
The ocean is a soup of genetic exchange. You find resistance genes in places that have never seen a salmon farm. There is a background resistance. The farm contributes, sure, but it's not the scorched earth scenario, some critics claim.
And the fillet on the plate. We export to markets that measure residues in parts per billion.
The safety profile is actually the industry's strongest card. Cernapesca's residue control program stats from 2013 to 2020.
Zero violations for fluorphenicol. Zero for flumiquine. Zero for erythromycin.
7 years of zero violations on the primary drugs. There were minor blips with oxytetracycline, but that's a math error.
The degree days calculation.
Exactly. Mix up the oral versus injectable withdrawal period and you get a residue. That's a management issue, not toxicology. The product itself is clean.
I want to circle back to the dosage. The paper identifies a huge gap between the label and reality.
This is a classic case of regulation lagging behind pharmacokinetics. The registered label dose is often set at, what, 10 milligrams per kilo per day?
But if you're a vet in the fjords, you know 10 milligrams won't even touch an intracellular bug.
It barely scratches the paint. So vets prescribe 20 to 30 milligrams per kilo for 14 to 21 days. It's extra label use. Legal, necessary, but it highlights a disconnect.
Because you need that higher plasma concentration to push the drug through the cell membrane.
The PK/PD modeling supports the higher dose. The study's recommendation is clear, update the registries. Make the label match the science.
So we've diagnosed the patient. What does the One Health approach forward look like?
It means admitting there's no silver bullet. You can't just invent a stronger antibiotic. You have to layer your defenses.
So things like Cernapesca's Pro-A certification.
Exactly. Turn low usage into a market asset. Then you have the PinCoy project, which is the collaborative model. Genetics, feed, pharma, all at the same table.
The paper lists four pillars for the future. First, genetics.
Breeding for SRS resistance, we're seeing real strides there.
Second, functional feeds.
Immunostimulants, fortify the barriers, the skin, and the gut.
Third, vaccinology.
The R&D holy grail. We need vaccines that target that intracellular stage. T-cell responses, not just antibodies.
And finally, diagnostics.
Precision medicine. Stop guessing. Move from it looks like SRS to confirmed isolation and MIC testing before you treat.
From a shotgun to a sniper rifle.
That's the goal.
So to recap for the listener, high usage in chili isn't about negligence. It is about a specific antagonist, P. salmonis, in a specific environment with a gap in biological control.
That's the summary. It's a technical problem that needs a technical solution.
So here's a final shot. We spend a lot of time worrying about resistance, about the bug outsmarting us.
Mm-hmm.
But if the microorganism is still wild-type susceptible to sulfenicol after 20 years, maybe we're fighting the wrong enemy.
It's a valid hypothesis. Maybe the problem isn't the genetics of the microorganism. Maybe the problem is the delivery system.
If the drug works, but it can't get to the target inside the cell, we don't need a new drug. We need a better vehicle.
Right. If you solve the intracellular bioavailability, if you can smuggle the drug into that vacuole, the consumption metrics could drop overnight.
It's a challenge for the pharmacologists and the feed tech companies.
But it might be the fastest route to those Norwegian numbers.
Something to think about. Stay efficient. Keep the data honest. We'll see you on the next deep dive.
Take it.
If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow the Aquaculture Podcast Show on your favorite platform. And don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook to stay updated on the latest episodes and industry insights. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.